So let's finish this phase of Bhrigu's journey. He goes back to Varuna again and says, the mind is Brahman, I can see that it's Brahman, but I'm not satisfied with this, my guru. This is not the answer for me. Show me Brahman. And once again, Varuna says, seek it through your tapasya. This is the fourth time he has had this instruction. He's thrilled by it, exhilarated, excited, because he's experiencing fundamental faith in what's happening. He didn't need to debate or complain or register any dissatisfaction at the repetitive, unrelenting statements of his guru, because fundamentally he experienced faith. So with no doubt in his mind, no division in him, he was thrilled because he thought, fantastic, there is something more to discover. So rather than that being disappointing to the mind of Bhrigu, it was exhilarating. Imagine that. Imagine yourself in that position. I'm sure, I hope, you would experience the same fundamental faith and pleasure in the redirection to seek it through your tapasya. In other words, more sadhana, more inquiry, more consideration, more reflection, more walking in the forest and writing poems and talking to philosophers and thinking and dreaming and lying on your bed in the middle of the night when you wake up and reflecting on the nature of things. More meditating, more prayer, more going about the day with a fascination in your mind, that as well as dealing with the business of the day is shining a light upon these wonderful, exhilarating questions about the nature of all this, the nature of I, the nature of me. Surely this is thrilling. So Bhrigu is thrilled and he goes away and he thinks and reflects and inquires into himself, and he realizes that mind has got another aspect to it. The higher mind, just earlier on I chose to call the mind we talked about, the lower mind, just for convenience. It's only one mind. It's only one mind. It's one. It's all in one. There aren't two distinct sections of the mind. But for convenience, we describe it in that way. So the higher mind, Bhrigu realized, just a minute, as well as all these desires and these emotions and these reactions and these perceptions and these sensations and all of these senses, all of which are fabulous, as well as all that going on, there's something else. I can think independently, it seems, about those things. I can use a part of my mind that can reflect and discriminate and examine and choose and assert its own interests. This part of my mind I may as well call intellect. The Sanskrit texts use the word vijnana. It's a clever distinction. It's not a difficult distinction. It's very obvious when you think about it. There's the mechanics of the mind, all the stuff that's going on moment by moment, the computer of the mind that we discussed earlier, all the things I just listed, plus memory, all of that. So that's all happening. Then there's apparently another part of the mind, which is you, the thinker, vijnana. It may interest you to know that for an ordinary, and by the word ordinary, it's not a classification that's derogatory, it's simply a mind that has never looked into any of these issues, that person with such a mind will consider him or herself to be this thinker. There's a reason for that. Because this aspect of mind captures a sense of agency. I am the agent. I am the thinking agent who can manage my mind, reflect, choose my thoughts, make decisions, and have opinions. It's everyday intellectual thinking, the discriminating intellect. It captures agency, will, ego, all these words together are pointing at a certain characteristic that comes about when consciousness shines upon vijnana, upon this intellect, when consciousness shines, as it does for us all, there is created in that mind a sense of I am the agent. The word doer is the word often used in the yoga texts and the Vedanta texts. The doership, that's this intellect. The agent, that's this intellect. The will, that's this mind, kind of mixed up in mind and intellect. Now these are faculties, of you. And they feel very, very personal. Well, of course they're personal. They're not someone else's. But they feel very intimate. They feel very solidly like, this is me. It is not difficult, really, with some discriminative thinking, to conclude that the body isn't really demonstrating what I think is me. It is not difficult to conclude that the energy, the pranas, the vitality, the life force, special as it is not actually me. It's something I'm experiencing. I'm experiencing the body and I'm experiencing this life force. That's not difficult to realize, to see the truth of. It's a bit more difficult to come to the realization that this mechanical mind that I described earlier, the senses and so forth, all that, is also not what I would say to actually be me. Because things like memory and so forth are happening, they're events, they're objects which I'm experiencing, so they're experiences. Now that's quite difficult to get to that point for, again, the ordinary mind. But through spiritual practice, it's achievable to get to that place. What I'm presenting now is more sophisticated. This is advanced. I'm now presenting exactly the same situation that the intellect, the very sense I am doing this thinking, I'm thinking about this, and I'm managing how those thoughts work. I'm assessing and evaluating and choosing. It is more difficult to realize that that too is being experienced with a D on the end and is not you, not the swarupa of you. It's a very important part of the functioning of you, but not the swarupa of you. All that can be summed up in the common sentence. I don't know if it is a common sentence, but I know that I have said it very often. You are not the thinker.